You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Meet the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife.
The Mariners will meet the Mets starting tonight in a three-game series. Thanks for being back, Mariners Pod. One of my favorite things, old baseball theme songs. And the Mets have a magnificent one. A rare series against the Mets. We'll dive into it with our good friend Mark Simon coming up in a few minutes. We'll also hear from Taylor Dollard, who is off to a great start at Arkansas this year. He is Texas League Pitcher of the Week. His numbers have been fabulous. We'll talk to him. He's also was roommates with George Kirby down there. So we'll hear all about George Kirby as well, who will start game two of the series against the Mets. In fact, this is how things line up for the Mariners starting tonight. First pitch, 4:10, Marco Gonzalez against Max Scherzer. Of course, the Mariners trying to get the offense cooking. Max Scherzer, not usually the recipe for that kind of success. We'll see what the Mariners can get done against the future Hall of Famer. Game two, George Kirby returns home. He'll face Chris Bassett, again, 4:10 on Saturday. And then Sunday, getaway day, Robbie Ray against Carlos Carrasco. The start of this grueling trip. Toronto for three after that. The Red Sox for four next weekend. This is a really tough trip. We talked about this month plenty already that it was not going to be easy. This, on paper, is the toughest stretch of the season for the Mariners, starting with the road trip last time through Florida and Houston. Of course, the Rays again back at home, and then the Phillies, and it has been a struggle. There's no doubt about it. And the Mariners trying to right the ship here on this road trip. And again, the Mets so far this season, they've been absolutely one of the best teams in baseball. They are 22-11 on the season, tied with the Dodgers for the best record in the National League. Their pitching has been excellent, top five ERA in baseball. Their offense really good as well, seventh in the majors in runs scored. Although it's interesting how they get there, a very different profile than we usually see with top scoring teams in baseball. They don't really slug. It's been on the rise a little bit, but still just halfway point in baseball in terms of slugging percentage. Just a really interesting group that makes a lot of contact. Scherzer, it's going to be a challenge, clearly, an ERA under three so far, 49 punch-outs in 37 innings, and it doesn't get much easier. Bassett in game two after a great start, a 2.5 ERA, 38 Ks in 36 innings. Carrasco, a great bounce back, a tremendous story, an ERA just a touch over three. He's got 33 strikeouts in 36 innings. The rotation has been excellent so far. And, of course, they have some big names offensively, Lindor, Alonso. I mean, you know a lot of the names, so it is going to be a really challenging weekend. We're going to dive into it more with our good friend Mark Simon. We'll also hear from Mark next week, too. We'll have a very fun conversation about defense. Right now, though, we're going to talk some Mets.
You watch the Mets on a daily basis, and they have been one of the most fascinating teams in baseball so far this season. Just give us kind of a big picture overview from what you've seen, from what has been a very interesting season so far.
So if you took the things that worked for the Giants last season in route to winning the 105 games in the National League West, I think that the Mets have adopted a lot of similar things from that. They've gone for a veteran team. They're willing to mix and match guys. They have their starters and their star players, and they're willing to mix and match guys in different spots when they need to. So let's start with the starting pitching. Starting pitching's been awesome. Scherzer and Bassett and Tylor Megill, which you couldn't have guessed in 1,000 years that he would make the jump. But like his first pitches of the season were like 98, 99 miles an hour. And you're like, what's this? And now you're just kind of, if you follow the Mets, you're just hoping he doesn't get hurt. And Carlos Carrasco had this lost year last season where he got hurt, where it just never worked for him. This year, he's right back to where he left off a couple of years ago in Cleveland. So all those guys have been fantastic with the knowledge that DeGrom will come back eventually. Mm-hmm. So they've all been really good. The bullpen's been mostly good, the occasional shakiness, but every team is dealing with that. I think if the Mets graded their bullpen, it would probably be a pretty solid B plus, A minus kind of thing. So you take that, and then you take the fact that Lindor looks a lot better than he did last year, that Alonso is blasting balls like he previously has, that Starling Marte's had a couple of really nice games, that they've won a couple of games that they absolutely positively should not have won. They've stolen games. They're essentially banking some wins right now. And they look a lot like a team that's going to win 100 this year, as long as they stay healthy. I don't know if they're going to. And I think that the last thing with that is the other piece with that is Buck Showalter. I think the tone that he set in spring training, they put together a team that was tailor-made for Buck because he's got his star players. He's got his really good pitchers. He can do what he needs to do with the bullpen. And then he's got his guys like Luis Guillorme that he can plug in here and there. And he can put Dominic Smith in for Pete Alonso at first base. And Pete Alonso can't say boo because it's Buck Showalter and because Dominic Smith's a better defensive first baseman than him. So I think you're seeing things like that. And then with that, are the little things and the attention to detail. There was a game earlier this season where the Mets had first and third. There was an appeal play at third base where the pitcher thought that the runner had left third base too soon. He turns around, flips the ball to third base. The third baseman steps on the bag. None of them noticed that the guy that was on first base just took second base. And that was J.D. Davis. He credited Buck Showalter with that after the game. He said that that was something that Buck taught them in spring training, and it worked there. It didn't necessarily impact the game, but it was a meaningful thing in the moment. And I think they right now look like an 100-win team. They look like the 06 team a little bit. They look not like it's a different thing than the 15 team, but the 06 team, we're not going to make comparisons 35 years ago to the 86, you know, ish teams, but they look a lot like the 06 team so far. They've been very, very good.
What do you see out of Francisco Lindor?
He looks a little bit more relaxed this year. He seems much more into it. The thing that hurt him last year was that he got off to a bad start. He looks comfortable in the field. He looks comfortable at the plate. He's given them good at-bats when they've needed it. He can run a little bit. He looks more comparable to the player that they thought that he was getting than the player that they got last year that was really just deep sigh, I guess, from the start. That feels like it's been completely washed away, and he's been very good so far for them.
We enjoyed watching our good friend Edwin Diaz, the former Mariner, close out a no-hitter, which is notable in Mets history. Just the second no-hitter a couple weeks ago. That was a pretty phenomenal night.
Yeah. He's had two appearances in his Mets career where it looked like he could have thrown 1,000 pitches and none of them would get hit. Both of them were against the Phillies. Both of them were against the heart of the Phillies lineup. The second of those was the set that closed out the no-hitter. 21 strikeouts in 12 innings. He's been very, very good this year. I think there's still trepidation when he comes into a game just a little bit, but more games like that will wipe it away. Diaz has had his rough times in New York. Right now, it seems like he's on an upswing, and it's just a matter of, I think for him, what it largely comes down to is like, are they chasing the slider? And if they're chasing the slider, he's going to throw 1,000 pitches and none of them are going to get hit because he keeps you guessing. And because that pitch, when it's right, just completely wipes hitters out.
The Mets had such an interesting offseason to me because it wasn't like the previous one where Lindor was like the headliner, right? It was more, you know, Canna and Bass, you know, these guys that don't necessarily grab the attention, but are really good players. Throw Escobar into that mix. I mean, how has that kind of puzzle all come together for the Mets, and how big of a factor has that been?
Yeah, so that's been really good so far. And the key to that is going to be whether or not those guys stay healthy, because Canna's 33, Escobar's 33, Marte's 33. James McCann, who they got 2 years ago, is 32. Travis Jankowski, who's been like their super sub off the bench, he's 31. Those to me feel like they were Buck Showalter kind of gets. They were gotten with the idea of that they're going to be high to modest on base guys. They're going to be good power guys. They're going to, if they're healthy, they're going to play 145 games, and you don't have to worry because the track record is there for all of them. That at the very worst, they're going to be, you know, average major leaguers. And at the very best, you're going to get something that's pretty good. And thus far, it's been pretty good.
It's wild to me to look right now. The Yankees, Mets, both in first place. The Dodgers, Angels, both in first place. Something about the LA, New York right now.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So the Yankee thing is kind of funny because when the season started and they didn't get off to a good start, the New York Yankee Twitter base was pretty stoked, I think. But now they've hit this run where the pitching's been very good. They've got four starters whose ERAs are very low. Their bullpen has been very good. Chapman has been strong. Clay Holmes has been really good. And then, like, little things come up, like this Nestor Cortez takes a no-hit bid pretty deep, and he's striking out 12 per nine innings, and he's looked great so far for them. And who would have figured that? And Gerrit Cole's been, after a bit of a shaky start, has been just fine. Mm-hmm. Guys have bad starts. Stuff happens. Trust the track record. His track record is pretty good. I think they're going to be pretty good. The interesting thing about the Dodger Angel thing is the Angels aspect of it. The Angels actually added a Met, Noah Syndergaard, this offseason. They seem to feel pretty good right now because they've got Ohtani, Trout, and Rendon healthy, even if Rendon's not necessarily hitting. They've gotten otherworldly production from some people that you wouldn't expect, like Taylor Ward, which is a bit of a mystery. And also give Velasquez credit. His defense at shortstop has been excellent for them. I'm not as convinced that they can keep this up for 162, but it's looking pretty good through the first 30 or 40.
As you look around baseball, is there anything else that's really caught your eye that you find pretty interesting so far on this young season?
I did not expect, well, all right, in the National League East, I didn't expect the National League East to be the Mets running and hiding as they've run and hid so far from the rest of the division, at least at the time they were taping this. Other than that, the Angels are certainly one. The White Sox struggle has been really interesting because it's a combination of a lot of guys getting hurt and some strange losses in the early part of the season that you wouldn't have expected them to have, certainly. Other than that, certainly the Red Sox floundering as they have. The Red Sox and Tigers both floundering. I want to say one thing on the Tigers. The Tigers at the time that we're taping this are 12 under 500. There was a feeling in Detroit that they had done enough to contend in the AL Central. But if you looked at the statistical projections for their players, that was not necessarily so. It kind of felt like they had gotten partway through the job, but not necessarily finished the job in terms of what they needed to do and player acquisitions. So not total surprise that they've floundered a little bit at the start. Those would be my team-related things, at least in the early part of the season.
Well, Mark, before you go, we're a big fan of yours and what you do and your podcast as well. We talked about it on the air the other night. You got to tell us where to go, where to find everything, all your good work.
Sure. Sportsinfosolutions.com is a good place for that. That's the company. We create and invent stats that we sell to major league teams, NBA teams, and NFL teams. And on the right-hand side of the page is all our written content. You can also follow us on Twitter at sportsinfo_SIS. And I'm at Mark A. Simon Says. So that's where I would follow along.
Mark, I love our chats. We'll have to do it again this year. Maybe when the Mariners play the Yankees coming up, we'll connect again and have a talk. But thank you for all the time. We really appreciate it.
You got it.
It's always great to hear from our good friend Mark Simon. And now we're going to chat with Taylor Dollard, pitcher at Arkansas, who's been excellent this year. How about this? In six starts, an ERA of 0.82, 22 innings, 23 strikeouts, 5 walks, so many things going well for Dollard, who recently won Texas League Pitcher of the Week.
So everything's been going well so far. Obviously had a little hiccup with the blister problems that I was dealing with from the beginning, But honestly, the biggest thing for me has just been filling up the strike zone and getting ahead of hitters and attacking hitters, and getting myself into counts that allow me to execute my pitches at a good level. And honestly, it's just been fun so far. I mean, I'm excited. The team's really good around me, and whenever I don't have my stuff, like, guys around me are picking me up. But yeah, it's been fun so far. And like I said, just attacking hitters early in counts and kind of getting ahead and being able to throw my stuff late to get guys out.
We know you spent a lot of time as your first couple of years in college as a reliever and then transitioned to a starter. And that's what you've been doing in the Mariners system so far. You've made that transition look pretty easy. Has it been as easy as it's looked from the outside?
I would say yes and no. It's definitely a lot different than what I was in, or what I started my college career at. I mean, in high school, I was definitely a starter. And when I got to college and I went to the bullpen my first 2 years there, that was an adjustment for me. And then going back into starting my junior season was definitely a little different, getting my pitch count higher. But I feel like I've done a pretty good job of kind of figuring out my routine for the week to get myself right for every start. And honestly, it's kind of nice being able to wake up every day and kind of have a plan of what I'm going to do and how I'm going to do it.
How different a pitcher are you since you entered the Mariners system?
I would say very different. I have kept a lot of things from like when I got drafted in terms of like command and everything like that, because when I got drafted, it was mostly like command and slider stuff. And I think honestly, since I've gotten drafted, my velo has been on a good trend in the upward department. And I think that a lot of my usages and pitch shapes and all that type of stuff has just slowly improved. I think the coaches have really helped me out with that. And definitely guys, just teammates helping me out with catch play stuff or showing me how they throw their pitches. It's kind of rubbed off on me in a good way. And honestly, I think I've taken a lot of steps forward in the right direction, and hopefully I can just keep on that path.
Well, you mentioned teammates, and really for the second year in a row, it's kind of overwhelming the starting arms that have been in Arkansas, and it's like that again this year. You're with George Kirby, you're with Levi Stout, just to name a couple. What has it been like to be surrounded by that level of arm?
It's fun, man. You get to, every day you're on an off day, you're watching whoever it is on the mound just go out and pitch like an absolute animal, you know. It's fun to watch. I mean, those guys are unbelievable talents, and I think it rubs off on me. Like I said, I want to be like them. I want to compete like them. And I think just picking up little things here and there from them, whether it's how to throw this pitch or what do you think about when you're doing this, or like, hey, what do you do for recovery? I mean, there's just a ton of knowledge that I feel like as a staff, like, we're really good at passing around to each other to help each other succeed, and having top talent around me. And I think I can speak for everybody on the team. Having guys like that around just makes everybody better.
You know, we had a chance to watch George Kirby in spring training. You've had a chance to watch him so far this season. How do you describe watching George Kirby pitch?
Unbelievable. One word, unbelievable. He, the way he goes about his business and the way that he can command the strike zone, and it's just, I've never seen anything like it. And it's definitely somebody who I try to like emulate, you know. And just the way he goes about his business is very professional. He's a great guy off the field. I mean, we're roommates on the road, so I get to spend plenty of time with George. And it's a blast, man. He's a great guy on and off the field. And honestly, I'm excited for his future. I think he's got big things coming.
For fans that have never watched you pitch, how would you describe yourself?
I would describe myself as a strike thrower, man. I mean, I fill up the zone pretty well. And I think the biggest thing for me is just being able to throw my four-pitch mix for strikes and get ahead in counts and kind of play baseball. You know, I'm not going to go out there and light up the radar gun at 101 like Kirby does sometimes, but I'm definitely gonna pitch and like kind of show off a little four pitch mix and find ways to get guys out consistently.
Were you always a pitcher?
Oh yeah, I think my last at bat like consistently was like freshman year of high school. Yeah, I could barely, very clearly remember a conversation I had with my dad. I was like 10 or 11, and I remember coming home from a game that I didn't get a hit in, and I was like, "Dad, I just want to pitch." And he turned around in the car, and he's like, "What did you say?" I'm like, "Dad, I just want to pitch." He's like, "Well, you can't do that yet. You're not old enough. Like, you need to still hit." And I was like, "Dad, I just want to pitch." And so, sure enough, like sophomore year in high school, they gave me the ultimatum, like, "Hey, if you want to play on the varsity team, you need to be where you're only going to pitch." And I was like, "Sign me up."
Nice. That's so good. How did your experience at Cal Poly help your progression as a pitcher?
Oh, phenomenally. I mean, Coach Larry Lee is probably, I'd probably put him in the top five coaches in the country without question. I mean, every day I stepped on the field there, I was learning something new. Whether it was positioning, whether it was like where the ball is supposed to go, whether it's whatever has to do with like defensive positioning. And then on the flip side, it's like the same thing. I would learn from my pitching coaches, Chow Fanning and Jake Silverman, who just helped me develop as a pitcher, command the strike zone, and allow me to like go out and compete. And honestly, like if it weren't for Cal Poly, I don't know where I would be. I mean, those coaches were phenomenal. The trainers were phenomenal. And all my friends that I have there were just super supportive of me throughout my career. And honestly, I can't say enough about that place.
So I've done a few basketball games there, and I got to say, I think Cal Poly is one of the underrated campuses in the country. On the water, beautiful weather, great spot. I imagine you had some outdoor activities. What were you into at Cal Poly?
Oh, it doesn't get better. I mean, the cold days are like cold, but then every other day after that is literally 75 and sunny. So you can't beat the weather. Your 10-15 minute drive to the beach one way or the other, and it's like it is the most beautiful like mountain greenery like you'll ever see. I mean, it's unbelievable. But for us, like my teammates were big into surfing, and so they kind of got me to start surfing with them during when COVID first hit, because we had nothing else to do, and I was like, "Sure, I'll get in the water, like I'll learn how to do it." And so sure enough, like picked it up, and I really, really enjoyed it. It's very therapeutic, and it's like a great workout too. So we were surfing probably once or twice a day, at least, like basically every day.
Nice.
The waves, the beaches are just unbelievable. Weather is unbelievable. And like I said, that they just redid the Cal Poly baseball field too, and it looks absolutely gorgeous.
You grew up a Yankees fan, and your brother grew up a Mets fan in California. How did this happen?
Yeah, so I mean, I was clearly the child raised right. My family's originally from New York, out in Long Island.
Oh.
And so basically, when I was growing up, my grandpa got me like super into the Yankees, and my mom, being a mama's boy, was a Yankees fan too. So I was cheering for the Yankees, and my dad, on the other hand, is Jets Mets fan. So my brother took after him, and so he's basically followed that path with the Mets throughout his life too.
Did that lead to any confrontation? Were you two okay?
Oh, believe me and him have sports debates at least once a day, if not more, for like as long as time can go on, basically.
Well, I imagine everyone's a Mariners fan in the family now.
Oh, believe me, we have shifted gears, to say the least. There's a lot of Mariners gear around the house now.
Nice. What was that moment like? It was such a strange draft. It was a strange year when you were drafted, in all our lives, really. What was that moment like when you were picked by the Mariners?
Oh, I still get the chills talking about it, honestly. But for me, it was a dream come true, honestly. Because it was during COVID too, and the draft got shortened to 5 rounds. I didn't know if I was going to end up getting drafted for whatever I wanted. And honestly, it was the longest day of my life. Because when the way it worked out was they televised round one, and then the next day they televised rounds 2 through 5. And being on TV and stuff, the draft obviously takes a lot longer with commercials and breakdowns and like all that stuff. So I think the draft started at like 2 o'clock and I didn't end up hearing my name called until like 7. So I was sitting there on the couch, just absolutely sweating, heartbeat out of my neck, just like waiting for the call, just waiting and waiting and waiting. And it was nice too, because I had my friends and my family around me too. So it was a super cool experience. And once I finally got that call, the room kind of went silent. Like everything, just nobody said a word. And sure enough, like 5 picks later, my name got announced and we were going crazy. We were celebrating. Everybody was happy. I shed a little tear. Mom shed tears too. I mean, it was surreal, honestly.
Now, this is an audio conversation. There's no visuals to go along with it. So we're going to need some really good description from you, but you've got to describe your hair.
I was waiting for this question, yeah. Honestly.
Well, you knew it was coming.
Oh, that, of course. I have a bleach mohawk, for those that don't know. Definitely turned some heads, to put it the lightest way. But the story behind it goes back to my sophomore year of college. Was I used to have like the full head of hair, like long hair. Like if anybody knows my teammate Colin Cober, we kind of had very similar haircuts, like when I first got drafted, or my sophomore year, I mean. And when I ended up getting drafted, they posted like a side-by-side picture of the two of us. And so like we looked like twins basically. And during my sophomore season, one of my teammates, his mom was starting chemo. And so a bunch of us shaved our heads. And for me, it was without a doubt, buzzed all of it off. And sure enough, once the hair started coming back, one of my best friends and teammates, Dylan Villalobos, came up to me and was like, "Hey man, we should do mohawks." And I was like, "All right, yeah, cool, I'm in, whatever." So we ended up going mohawks for the rest of the season. And in the summer ball, it started to get longer and longer. And I was like, "Yo, I kind of like the way this is looking." Then all of a sudden, one day, don't know why, but I woke up one day and I was like, "You know what? I kind of want to bleach it. I think I'm going to bleach it." So sure enough, I go home. My mom bleaches my hair for me. And it's been a staple ever since.
You mentioned your slider. We know about your fastball. How did your other two pitches come about in your progression?
Yeah, so the curveball is actually a funny story, too. It was, I believe it was like towards the end of my sophomore season in college again, and into summer ball. So it was like the very last couple weeks of my sophomore season and into summer ball. I wanted to start throwing something else other than my fastball and slider mix, because my changeup wasn't really good either. But I knew I have the ability to spin the ball pretty well. And so one day I was just playing catch with one of my teammates and I was like, "Hey, I'm going to throw a curveball here." And sure enough, I threw it and it was really good. And I was like, "You know what? I think I'm going to run with this a little bit." And so slowly but surely, like throughout the end of my sophomore season throughout summer ball, I was throwing a curveball. And I was like, "This thing is really good. I can throw this to, it gives me an ability to throw this pitch to lefties, get ahead early against righties." And ever since then, I've kind of just kept developing that pitch over and over and over. And honestly, where it's at right now makes me very happy. And then the changeup is another funny story, actually. Last season in Everett, I had a sit down with our pitching coach, Sean McGrath. And I was like, "Hey, if you were to tell me to throw one pitch, what would it be?" And he was joking with me. He says, "A knuckleball." And so I looked at him. I'm like, no, seriously. Like, what would you tell me to throw?" And he was like, "Well, I would tell you to throw Levi Stout's changeup." So I go over to talk to Levi, or I go over and I see Levi. I'm like, "Hey, how do you throw your changeup?" And he shows me the grip. And ever since that point, that has been the changeup grip that I've thrown. And that's the pitch that has developed into a very, very good pitch for me now, too, against lefties especially. So that credit for the changeup definitely goes out to Sean McGrath and Levi Stout, no doubt. That just goes back to, like, what I was saying earlier. Like, being around guys with elite pitches and elite talent, I mean, it just – there's no words to describe how much it does for our careers.
Wow, that's great. Well, Taylor, thank you for all the time you've taken today. We really appreciate it. Congrats on the great start, and we'll catch up again soon. Thanks so much.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.